You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is Season 3, Episode 3. Well, hey guys, and welcome to this week of Feathers. I am so glad that you have decided to join us. I hope maybe you're listening in your fringe hours. If you weren't with us last week, you have to go back an episode and listen to the conversation with Jessica Turner. So I'm so happy that you're here. I want to first off give a little shout out to an upcoming women's conference. It's called the IF Gathering. It's coming up on February 5th and 6th. And for those not familiar, it really is just, it's a conference that's happening in Austin, Texas. And then there are local gatherings all over the world that will simulcast the conference from Austin. It will happen, there's over a thousand events, local events happening all over the world. And just last year is the time when God used IF Gathering to really confirm that I should do this podcast. So it's a very special time for me, and I'm just so expectant of what God will do this year. So you just go to ifgathering.com and find your local event. If there's not one, you can just start one. 2 years ago, I just gathered six or seven friends, and we watched from a laptop, so that's totally doable. And if you are local to me in South Charlotte, we have one for IF York County. I will be the MC there this year, and we would love to see you there. So get on ifgathering.com and see if you can get signed up. I think it's just going to be so awesome. Also, of course, we need to talk about the shop. I got the first round of coffee mugs out to people, and I've hand-delivered some of them, and it's been so fun to watch people open them up and then see pictures online afterwards of people using it. So really hope that you can get out there. We have mugs. We have t-shirts. We have the bookmark. I actually have some journals and mouse pads coming, so keep an eye out there. So exciting. And just thank you so much for supporting this podcast and help us to keep going. So let's talk about today's episode. Today, I actually have one of my internet turned in real life friends on. Her name is Katrina Ryder. She lives about, I guess, 30 minutes away from me. She's a former English teacher and missionary. She's currently a stay-at-home mom with three kids, and she teaches Bible studies locally to her. And she is just one of those friends that has some of the biggest faith that I know. She's wise and discerning, and yet she is just one of those people that will shoot you straight. She doesn't have time, you know, for the fluff, and has just a great sarcastic humor wrapping it all up. So she's a ton of fun to be around, and really glad to share one of her stories today. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Katrina Ryder. Well, Katrina, welcome to Feathers today.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, why don't we start out, introduce yourself and your family.
I am Katrina Ryder. I'm married to Jeremy, and I have three children, Addie, who is 10 and a half, Dylan, who is 8 and a half, and Annika, who is 6 and not quite a half. She's very specific about her age, so I have to... She will not be 6 and a half until February 1st. She would want me to.
Oh, my goodness. So do you guys celebrate half birthdays officially?
Not at all. They just like to know for their own purposes of stating their age. And it's particularly important to her for some reason.
It's interesting. Now that you say that, like, my kids have never, ever mentioned a half birthday.
I don't know why mine do. Dylan's often falls around Thanksgiving, so I kind of keep it in my mind. Well, it always falls around Thanksgiving, but his half birthday, I guess, would be November 25th. So we jokingly will say something like, oh, it's Dylan's half birthday, and then that got them thinking about it for some unknown reason. So,
oh, interesting.
There you go.
And actually, I'm just looking at the calendar, like, my half birthday is in next week.
So yay,
I'm gonna celebrate.
Aren't you so excited?
Oh, I love that. So what people will not know listening is that we are in real life friends.
Yay.
But also we are internet friends. We're like both.
Indeed.
So I thought we'd share the story about how we met, but I don't think you remember.
I don't know if I do. I thought I did. I remember our first in real life meeting.
Okay. All right. So I'll go back to what I remember, and my memory is so terrible, but this is what I remember. I remember that, we had friends in our small group, Neil and Joy. Hi, Neil and Joy, if you're listening. They're in our small group and they have a daughter, PJ, and we all live in the Charlotte area. And PJ, I'm friends with her on Facebook. She had done some photographs for us for one of our family things. And she posted, I think, one of your posts from your Porganic Life website. And when I did some digging, I realized you're in Waxhaw. And I think I emailed you and like, hey, like, you're right down the street from me. Basically, I mean, like 40 minutes right down the street, but in the Charlotte area. So that's what I remember. I don't remember how we ended up. It might have been through the Summer of Seven, the Jen Hatmaker book that we kind of coordinated.
I don't know anybody named PJ, so that's awesome, but I don't remember any of that at all. Yeah, I just remember that we did Summer of Seven and we somehow got connected during that time. And I think that was when I was really active in doing link ups, and I think I'd seen you on link ups, so I don't know. But anyway, we're friends now. We're a success story for online friendship. Yay.
Yeah, really. Yep. So we've gone to birthday dinners.
Indeed.
And you've come to my yard sale before.
I know. Exactly.
And my noonday collection.
I know.
So it's like legit.
It's like a real friendship. It really happened.
Oh, that's so much fun. So I love you, obviously, and I'm really excited to have you on today because we were talking about it, like you could probably take up like 4 or 5 episodes. You have so many great stories of your faith and obedience, and it's actually really hard to pick which story I would love for you to share with people. But you had written a post recently about just a story and journey you guys had been with your husband's job. And I just thought it was just so perfect. And so I picked that one. So that's what we're going to share today.
Sounds great.
Yep. So if you want to take us back to, I guess, when you guys, it all started when you were missionaries, right?
Right. So my husband and I were missionary teachers in Papua New Guinea. And we went with the intention of being career missionaries. And that did not work out. I will not tell that whole story, but we ended up deciding about a year in that we would just fulfill our initial 2-year commitment and then we would not renew our commitment. And we felt like the Lord was leading us once we would leave the mission field to pursue music ministry. My husband was a music teacher and he really felt like his passion for teaching had completely dissipated, and he had led worship quite a bit while we were on the mission field, and he wanted to pursue that more. So even while we were still overseas, he was reaching out to churches that were looking for worship pastors and creating videos. And we had a 2-year-old, and I was very pregnant with my son. So we moved back when I was 30 weeks pregnant, and immediately he started pursuing different leads and candidating around for music ministry. And we were pretty excited because even though our missionary dreams had kind of not worked out, we felt like God had led us really directly into this next thing. And of course, we're having a new child and we're going to be moving somewhere. We don't know where. So there was a lot of fun, happy adrenaline at first. And then when we were living in some transitional missionary housing near where we currently live, that was not like we'll just call it not the nicest apartment complex ever. And so he kept getting these interviews, and he would travel to different places and he would be like in the top 3 or the top 2, and then they would pick the other guy. This happened several times. And when I'm sure that's hard in any kind of job selection, but for some reason, you know, when it's ministry, that makes it even harder. And when it's worship, it's like very hard to take. Like,
I can imagine.
My worship is second best to some other guys. Yeah. Then I had my son and we're living in this transitional housing, and my son ended up having colic. So he was crying all the time. And that summer, which was the summer of 2007, I don't know if anyone else lives in the Southeast and knows about that summer, but it was a terrible drought. It didn't rain at all, and it was beastly hot. And it just became increasingly discouraging for us. He wasn't finding a job. Our funds from having been missionaries were drying up. Dylan was crying constantly, and the enthusiasm for, you know, for pursuing God's plan for us was kind of petering out.
So during this whole time, you guys have just, you really felt called. Like, you, I think the kind of phrase you had gotten was pursue ministry, right? I mean, it was a very specific direction that you had.
Right. And we felt like, for him especially, the whole winding down with teaching thing was very clear. And pursuing ministry was like very natural. And he was just sort of naturally good at it. And he had, because he's a teacher, he was good at working with teams. He plays a lot of instruments. And for me, it kind of felt like, why haven't we been doing this all along? This just seems like what he ought to be doing. So it seemed very natural. And I'd always, you know, I thought, well, maybe my understanding of wanting to be missionaries was really God just wanting us to be in ministry. And so we didn't succeed at the missions thing, so maybe we'll succeed at this thing. And I mean, honestly, I had baby brain, so I had less clear direction other than, like, you know, wake, nurse, soothe crying baby, try to sleep, wake up. And the closet of this apartment we were staying in had, like, the pack and play and, like, all his gear, all his guitars and amps and everything. And he'd be in there with headphones on, like, trying to rehearse or record something for an audition tape or practice songs and get sets together. And I'm, like, bouncing Dylan around the apartment in the little thing, trying to get him to be quiet. And of course, we have a 2-year-old too, and it's so hot outside. Like, I remember walking, and we had to carry our laundry to this laundry room that was out the back of the building, and the grass would, like, it was like crunch. It was that the air was just so dry. Our parents and just people around us kind of kept saying, like, as months and months went by and our transitional support ended and no job was happening, we started getting the, like, well, now it's just a little bit foolish what you're doing, this whole waiting on God thing. You know, that was the,
right.
That was how it felt. Like, they were thinking, you know, it's just irresponsible to, like, have children come into the world and be unemployed and keep waiting on God. Like, who does that intentionally? So yeah. We would walk around the missionary complex and just talk and pray. And I kept not questioning him, because I did feel confident in my spirit that we were doing the right thing. But, you know, saying, like, okay, are you still feeling the same way? Even though you keep getting runner up, you know, do you still want to do this? And he just kept kind of doggedly saying, yes, this is what we're supposed to be doing. Well, school starts here in late August, and, like, around the second week of August, several people, including both of Jeremy's parents, who are both teachers, kind of were just like, okay, people, it's time for him to go get a teaching job. Like, stop monkeying around with this whole waiting on God thing and, like, be a grown up. And I said to him, you know, would you ever consider going back to teaching? And he said at that time, the only way that I would go back to teaching is if there were a job in Waxaw, because I just wouldn't put our family moving again. And that job is just not available. And so I really feel like God is going to provide this ministry job that we've been waiting for, because this other possibility isn't out there. So
how long, I'm just curious, like, how long had you been waiting at this point?
We got back to the U.S., on April 1st. And that's kind of the irony, is like we did our travel on April Fool's Day, and it was like a 40-hour day for us because we just kept going over like the international dateline. And I was like, this is April Fool's Day because we can't get out of this day.
It's almost like Groundhog Day.
I know. I'm like, why can't I get through this day? So April 1st, we got back to the U.S. And so April, May, June,
so it's like
July,
4 months.
August was going on 5 months. And our support ended, I'm trying to forget when we ran out of money or when we were like, we're just spending our savings. You know, we had enough money to go, but this looming deadline of like not having any money, not being allowed to live in missionary housing, you know, doors would be closing, the money door, the housing door. So we were waiting, but also we sort of had God on a clock, like, you know, of our practical needs. So early in September, after school had already begun, and he was in like the final stages with a fourth church. And we'd gone up there and candidated. And of course, any church that he gets sort of in the final stages with, they wanted to meet me. And so I'm carting this colicky baby and a two-year-old around to all these places. So it was stressful. We'll say it that way. So this church up in Cary, North Carolina, that we were really hopeful for because it wasn't as far away as some of the other places, they decided on the other guy. And it was sad. And we were starting to get weary. And even our, like, we're waiting on the Lord. We're trusting him. You know, it didn't even sound that great to us anymore either.
Well, I think you just start questioning, like, did we hear right?
Right.
Like, did we miss something?
Exactly.
Like, what is going on?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, Jeremy, I think it was a relatively new song at the time. This is back in 2007. That song, Strength Will Rise As We Wait Upon the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had had that song in his set at every church he'd candidated at. And I'd heard him play it and practice it and do different variations of it. And, you know, all summer long. So this was kind of like encouraging at first. And then it was like a truth that really began to make us cringe a little bit. Like, we're really tired of this whole strength will rise as we wait upon the Lord bit. Thank you very much. So we had gone to a small group meeting with a small group that had supported us as we'd gone on the mission field. And so we'd come back and finally gone to this group meeting. And of course, lo and behold, the passage they were discussing for that night was Isaiah 40:31, which is the scripture that this song is based on. You know, those who wait on the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. And as soon as the leader of the group started reading it, you know, Jeremy and I are like rolling our eyes at each other and like, oh, this again. And we're trudging out to the car afterwards, lugging Dylan, who was screaming, of course. And I don't know. I mean, it was obviously the Holy Spirit, because I would have been too exhausted to have such an epiphany. I said, maybe we need to just stop praying that this process will end. Because that's kind of what we'd been praying the whole time. Like, Lord, give us a job, you know, end this waiting, end the waiting. That's what we wanted. We wanted the waiting to stop.
Right. And, either redirection or a job.
Right. Like, we need a job. We need a house. We need security. We need it all to be like the family of four, a boy and a girl and a job and a picket fence and all that. And that's what we had. And that's what we wanted. But maybe we're not, like, we don't want the waiting to stop if we don't actually have the strength yet. You know how it says strength will rise as we wait? Mm-hmm. Well, I started to realize from having heard that line 50 bajillion times that if we stopped waiting before we got all the strength we were supposed to have, then we would still be weak. And I just said, maybe we're supposed to pray that this waiting process will continue and that we'll get as strong as we need to be so that we'll never have to do this again. Like, I never want to have to learn this particular lesson again. So I only want to have to do this one time. Let's pray that this waiting goes on as long as it needs to for us to be grown. Grow us up, kind of thing. Right. And so we sat in that car. It was this two-door, I remember, because it's impossible to get a baby carrier into a two-door car. And I remember, like, hoisting Dylan through the back into that baby cradle thing and praying in the front seat of that car that we would keep waiting. And
that seems like a hard prayer to pray for after 5 months.
It was like
waiting and rejection.
Keep this going. Don't end this process, but make me as strong as I need to be. And it was like in the midst of praying that I felt like I heard or thought or realized for the first time that God actually had never promised me or Jeremy this music ministry job. That the only thing that we'd heard him say was, pursue this. He hadn't said, I will give you this.
Or, yeah, I have a job waiting for you.
Right. Like, we think one thing, we think when he says, pursue this, that the thing we're pursuing will be what he gives us.
Well, it seems obvious. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, like, I think that's natural to say, well, if you, like, it's telling your kids, like, will you go look for a calculator? And maybe knowing that a calculator is not in a room. Like, why would you send them off to find a calculator if you know the thing is not in there? Like,
right.
Naturally, it doesn't seem to make sense.
It does and it doesn't. Because have you ever given your kids something to do just to occupy them while something else is happening? It's like,
yes. Well, I'm thinking, yeah.
I mean,
no, I get it. Definitely has a place, and I think with the way the story turns out, it does.
See,
but
you know,
I think
you know where this is
going. I know
going.
The end. I know where it's ending. But like for right now, in that exact moment,
yeah.
you hear pursue ministry. You think, why would he have me pursue ministry if that's not where
right.
I'm supposed to end up? Like to me, naturally, I don't think that would compute.
Well, and I don't think, and I think that's why. I mean, if you think about Abraham and Isaac, when God sends Abraham mm-hmm. up to sacrifice Isaac, he's telling him to do something that he has absolutely no intention of making him do. It's a faith exercise. But we hate mm-hmm. it when God does stuff like that. But he does stuff like that in scripture all the time, telling Jonah yeah. to go to Nineveh. You know what I mean? He has no intention to let him die in the belly of that whale, but by golly, it is a faith exercise to get his people to say, I'll do it. I'll do whatever crazy mess you want me to do.
But you have to believe that's where I'm going
right.
and trust me. Yeah.
So,
okay. So tell us the rest of the story.
Okay. So the rest of the story is we pray this crazy prayer. And I just felt like, then I knew that it was okay. Like, I don't know how I did. And it was within the week. It might have been the very next day. Jeremy said that he felt like God was telling him he should go online and look for a teaching job in Union County. Well, school had started 3 weeks prior. And he teaches music, and there's only
like one music teacher.
Music teacher per school. So yeah. It's not like this is a likelihood. And so I was kind of like, okay, whatevs. Like plus he limited himself to one county. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that's how many elementary schools or middle schools or whatever are in a county? Like
when he looked,
versus how many actual teachers are in there. I mean, it's a very, very small, like 1% or something like that. It has to be.
Ridiculously small.
Yeah.
And, and he didn't want to do band anymore. He wanted to do general music. Like, if I go back, he was being super picky. So it's like, I'm already unemployed. I might as well be picky. I don't know. Whatever. So, and he had looked in the summer when that's when they hire, and there was only like 4 elementary music jobs in the entire state of North Carolina. So he looked, and there was one job, and it was elementary music at Waxaw Elementary School, which was the—
That's your town.
That is the town we were living in, the town I grew up in, the elementary school that I went to.
And so if he could have handpicked a music position in the whole state of North Carolina, that's the one he would want.
Exactly. It was literally what he'd said that summer. Like the only way I'd go back to teaching is if it was at Waxaw Elementary School and they don't have a position. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen because they already have a music teacher and she's not going anywhere. She had begun the school year knowing that she was going to open this restaurant or something, but wanted to have benefits. So she was planning to teach for like 1 month and then resign.
Wow.
So this job was posted 3 weeks into the school year.
But you guys didn't know that at the time.
Of course not. Of course not. And in the subsequent days, we both really felt like God had sent us on this path towards ministry to hold us in transition until that exact job, that only one job, became available. And
so just to close the loop here, he did get the job and he has been there for how long?
He got the job. He's been there 8 years. He loves it there. He was teacher of the year. He got his national boards. He is like,
he's thriving.
I don't think I'm exaggerating to say that he's a little bit of a local celebrity. Like when we go anywhere in Waxaw, all the children like flock to him like the Pied Piper or something.
What is that about the music teacher? I actually find that too, because when we're out and we see our music teacher, they're like, oh my gosh, it's Mr. Fox.
I know. Well, the kids love music. He's very good at it. He's the only male teacher at the school. So he's always telling me about, it's so sweet. Like kids who don't have dads in their home are always like wanting to hug him, which he's not really supposed to do. So he's like, I give him the sidearm hug. And I feel like he has more ministry, more music ministry doing what he does now than he would have had doing anything else. And,
That's powerful right there.
And I just, now whenever I hear that song, I just feel like God was saying, because I've prayed the prayer many times, like, Lord, is this just a false path? Are you just distracting me? Are you just sending me on a, you know, a tangent? And I think of that story and I think of him saying, if I am, will you trust me? Will you trust that this tangent, as you call it, is for your good, that I'm holding something in waiting for you that's so worth it, that's better than what you think you want.
But I love too that you brought up Abraham and Isaac, because really there wasn't something necessarily, I mean, he provided a sacrifice, but really it was truly a test, like a faith test, some of these tangents, right?
Right. Well, and I wonder, like, we've said to ourselves, what if he'd taken one of these other jobs in one of these other North Carolina schools in the summer? Or what if he, you know what I mean? What if we hadn't, if he had done anything sooner, if we hadn't waited as long as we did, which, I mean, it was only 6 months. I know people who have gone through unemployment much, much longer. We were not in dire straits. I mean, God answered by the time he got his first paycheck, we were like, we had $0. We literally spent. But another conviction that kind of went hand in hand with that whole lesson that I won't elaborate too much on was in the apartment, this like missionary secondhand furniture from the 70s, whatever, that we lived in that I became very discontented with. There was a framed picture hanging above the dining room table. Probably almost anyone with grandparents has seen it. It's like an old man bending over like a bowl of soup and a loaf of bread.
Yes, I think I have seen that.
He's got white hair and he looks kind of monastic or something. Anyway, the Lord was teaching me a lesson that summer about contentment and waiting for our daily bread. And, you know, we so much wanted to know what was going to be happening in 2 months and 3 months and 4 months and 5 months and 6 months. Would we have a house? Would we, where would we live? Would we have enough money? Would we run out of money? And God kept asking me every time I saw that picture, you know, do you have enough to eat? Have you ever gone even one day without food? Have I ever not provided your daily bread for you? That's not going to happen. Be assured that I am providing for you. And that's exactly what happened. The minute that our money was gone, he had a job. And we ended up finding a house and buying a house. And we still live in that house. And we love it. So I don't know if there's like a wonderfully great punchline to my story.
Well, no, I just want to, and I love that you brought up that you were learning contentment, because I want to talk about that when it says that strength will rise as we wait upon the Lord. So I'm just curious, you said we needed to be as strong as we needed to be so we didn't have to learn that lesson again. And I hear you saying you learned lessons of contentment. That was part of your strength. So now you're so much stronger in a lot of situations that you can trust and be content with what you have. And I have to assume you're just in general learning about rejection.
Yeah, I think that was, I mean, I can't speak for him. My husband is not a man of very many words. But that whole time of his life was very difficult. I don't think ministry, not just that summer, but even leaving the mission field, I don't think working for the Lord worked out for either of us quite the way that we'd envisioned it. And I think that God taught us both a lot about what we view as ministry and what our hearts, I guess, this isn't very articulate, but, you know, the expectations we have for how it's going to feel to work for God. We expect to get sort of a lot of spiritual rewards and, like,
yeah, I talked about this
jewels
with,
in our crown.
Yeah, with Jessica Hoover. It was in the beginning of season one we talked about this and how they were making the decision whether to go overseas for missions. And her husband really felt led to stay in the States and be in a, you know, quote unquote, regular job. And then that really was his mission field.
Yeah. I just thought of one other thing that I should share associated with this, that just after I wrote that post where I told this story, a friend of mine sent me a Facebook message, and she said, I'll see if I can find it. She was babysitting some children who are foster kids. Okay, let me just read this. Katrina, here's something to tell your husband. I had two kids, a brother and sister at my house who are foster kids, for a respite and to give their foster parents a break. They were singing the whole time. They were singing the Dr. Seuss medley. He does a unit on Seussical. They were doing all these dances. I asked them where they learned all these fun songs. They said they learned from Mr. Ryder at school. It's so much better for them to be singing than punching holes in the wall and throwing things, some of the emotional outlets that children like this experience. He has given a gift to some kids who can really use it. And that made me cry, because I think it does affirm that he is in a kind of ministry, and being a Christian teacher in a public school in itself is something that that he's really good at. So it makes me really happy and proud of him.
Well, you know, that story, I have tears in my eyes just thinking about that. You know, we all know adoption is close to my heart.
Yeah.
So that is such... gosh, that is such a ministry that he's doing. And just, you know, a couple weeks ago, I interviewed Mary Carver.
Yeah.
And talking about Sarah Frankel's, mm-hmm. Her disease and how, you know, maybe she would never really understand why, you know, God chose certain things, you know, to happen to her. And a lot of times how we don't know. But I love this story because I think you can look back and you can see why you were getting a no.
Right.
And so I don't think it always happens like that. But I think it's just beautiful to see the times that you can look back and say, oh, that's why he sent us in that direction. That's why we got rejected so many times.
Yeah.
He just had such a good gift waiting on us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's helped me in other times where he said no to say, you know, I still trust you. I know I wanted that, but I can see that you probably have something better for me. So,
yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I love your podcast. I love you.
Oh, thank you. Aww, all the hearts. So people, you are a blogger, so people want to find you online and hear all your wonderful stories. Where can they do that at?
I blog semi-occasionally at katrinarider.com. It's Rider with a Y.
Yep. So she doesn't blog a lot, but when she blogs, it's awesome. It's a pretty good way to say it.
Hopefully, I'm starting a new Bible study series, and I'm planning to blog the study or write the study on my blog. So hopefully there will be more up there. And the study is called Tone Up, Taming the Tone in Your Home. So if you want to know about that, you can
need to know about that.
keep up with the next, I would say, 10 weeks worth on my blog.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Katrina. I know when I think back to this story, I am just reminded how much we can trust God, that He knows how to lead His children. You know, He is called the Good Shepherd, and the shepherd knows his sheep, and he knows how to lead his sheep. And the sheep's only job is to listen to the shepherd's voice and follow. And this is just, to me, such a great example of when we can hear God's voice, or hear a shepherd's voice, and stick to our guns and say, no matter what, I'm going to obey you. I'm going to follow you. That He can work everything out just according to His plan. When things don't make sense, when we feel like He has forgotten us because we are waiting so long, He is actually working His plan perfectly. And again, I just love that in this particular story, they can look back and see where God was just clearly at work, and they understand why they had to wait. And it's not always the case, as we talked about, but in this case, we can see that God was at work, and they can see why, and just all the blessings and favor that He has given Katrina's husband since then, and just the ministry work that He is doing when it's not even called ministry in a title, that He is being a music teacher, and that really is where He is able to have such a great effect on children and their families, and who knows how many generations that His work will impact for the name of the Lord. So I'm just so encouraged by the story. I hope you are too, and that you are just walking away just once again encouraged to follow our Good Shepherd. So thanks again to Katrina for sharing that story. You can get all the show notes over at featherspodcast.com. Don't forget to visit the ifgathering.com to sign up for that, and to visit the shop at amyjbennett.com/shop. So lots of what my husband calls interneting that we want you to do. So thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time on Feathers.